Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status helps educators at every level take control of student data for increased outcomes and meaningful stakeholder engagement. Find out more at schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 263, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. This episode, do you have great professional email etiquette? We'll actually review some rules to make sure you do. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each episode, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we hear from a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This episode, one teacher tells us how she applied some new time management tricks to balance her personal life while also remaining a superstar teacher. It actually is what kept her in the business. Stay with us. Hello, friends. Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined by friend, assistant superintendent, and co-host of the Class Dismissed podcast, Dr. Christina Pollard. Christina, how are you doing? It's the weekend. Are you having a good weekend so far?
I have thoroughly relaxed and recharged this weekend. I was wrapping up Superintendent's Academy called the Forum for Educational Leadership last week in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, how was that?
Oh, it's amazing. A wonderful experience to collaborate and to be cultivated and developed by some educational gurus. And one of the sessions we had talked about the extreme importance of self-care and refueling so that we could be at our best and at our optimal levels, when you report back on Mondays. So I was very purposeful this weekend in cutting off everything and everyone and literally having quiet time, some silent time.
Right.
Just listening to, the atmosphere, the birds, the trees. And it has been really refreshing. And I've decided I've got to do it at least once a month where I just...
More than once a month, I
everything.
Think.
It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
But definitely one weekend a month, it's going to be mine.
Right.
Just
your time.
For me. Yep.
So was that session led by like an expert or was it like somebody else in your industry who...
Well, I will tell you, Pete Gorman and Associates, pretty much heads up the Forum for Educational Leadership. And there are former superintendents that are a part of his team. And there are aspiring and current superintendents from all over the country that participate in this if you are accepted. I was a part of cohort number 5. There were 65 of us. I met some of the best and smartest people from around the country who are doing some extremely innovative things in school districts all over the country. And I was just really impressed. I was empowered. They taught me a lot in the short time that we spent together over the last 5 months. And the wonderful thing about it is it's not one and done. You stay connected to them. They mentor you. They coach you. They walk you through the hiring process to land a superintendent position. I'll be very honest with you. They coached me and walked me through achieving this new assistant superintendent position. And my participation in the forum also granted me membership into Women Leading Ed. And that is another phenomenal organization comprised of female leaders from all over the country. And
that's cool.
I'm just excited about what the future holds.
That's really neat. I did something similar like that not long after I became a news director. And I remember going to the conference and somebody was leading a session and they said, does anyone know the average lifespan of a news director? And it turned out it was like right under 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And I kid you not, I think the average lifespan of an NFL running back is 3 years. It's
my
like,
goodness.
Why?
Well, it's a big, why a lot is of, it, that's a lot of aggression on the body.
Right. It's just stress. And it goes back. I don't know if it's like that when the superintendent's office
it
or
assistant feels that way, like you're being hit every day.
Oh, yeah. So hang in there. I think it's important to focus on the self-care. Today, I've got a real like simple, easy to digest topic. It's something that I think a lot of us already know these things, but there's probably some of us who don't because we're all kind of from different generations. We use different tools. And this is about email. Okay. Are you a big email person or do you
Oh, absolutely.
Do you find that the Gen Z teachers that are coming online, are they good at email?
I think it just depends. I think because of my role and I believe in providing extreme support, they always respond to me. I have great communication with my novice teachers in my former district. And my new district, I'm still learning them. I have found that there are a few who have not responded to some emails yet, but I'm not sure, you know, just where they fall. I think it just depends on what arena you're in. We probably need to hear from someone in corporate America.
Right. So this is kind of from that field, and this is from Career Contessa. It's an article that offers practical advice for writing professional emails effectively. Okay. So just a few rules, and I'll roll through them and you can give me your feedback. The first one is spelling and personalization. Ensure correct spelling of the recipient's name and personalize the email when possible by mentioning recent accomplishments or interests. You don't know how many times I receive emails that say they spell my last name wrong. And that does kind of bother me. Does that ever happen to you?
Absolutely. And for that matter, I could get on a soapbox about how my first name and my last name are not only misspelled, mispronounced. I'm Katrina, Christine, everything but Christina. And of course, the very first thing people try to say is Pollard instead of Pollard.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I get Ortega. Which is a great name, you know, like the salsa taco company.
Yeah, but where did they get that from?
I don't know.
Just read it.
Exactly. And so what it's the message it sends to me is not, I'm insulted, they don't know my name. It's that you don't pay attention to details. I think it's like a bad first impression when I see like, okay.
And that's a very important skill.
Right. So it's not personal. It's more just like, all right, details. All right, second one, formatting. Use formatting tools such as bullet points, line spacing, bold fonts to improve readability and clarity. I'm a big believer in this. A lot of times people like just kind of type massive long paragraphs and getting all their thoughts out. And someone in your position probably would prefer bullet points, a one sheet.
I agree. I'm also a big proponent of this. I like to keep things very clean, very concise. I like explicit instructions or just, you know, explicit remarks. Get to the point simply because I have so many emails coming in and need to respond. And so you absolutely. And when someone sends me something very long, I'll be very honest, depending on how much pressure I'm under, what time of the day it is, I'll close it and tell myself I'll read it later. And that's a problem when it might be something urgent, but it's so long and so convoluted, I just don't have the time.
Like stripping email out of that, I used to like meetings that were walking meetings, like catch me in the hallway and we can talk and work something out. And rather mm-hmm. than schedule a meeting with me and make it this big, you know, 15, 30 minute process, if we can do it in the hallway, like let's do that, you know? So I kind of feel like that's the same thing. If it can be bulleted, let's bullet it.
I think that's great. If you're, in my instance, if you're a building level principal, you're out in the hallways, you're amongst them. That's a great way to communicate. For me, because I'm at the district office and I have to work around their instructional schedules, I do live by the calendar. But when I'm in buildings visiting, if someone wants to chat with me, I absolutely try to give them the time. But from my seat, a structured calendar is important.
All right, next one, starting new threads. It says start a new email thread rather than continuing long chains to make communication easier to follow. I only do this if I'm changing the subject, really. That's me, but.
Well, I have to be honest. Sometimes you just get lost in those threads and they layer upon each other and it's frustrating. But not only that, people are copied, people are removed. It's just too much. And so, yeah, fresh, clean email, keep it simple.
Okay, next one.
Just don't delete the old one.
Yeah, that's true. I do try to archive stuff just for record keeping purposes. Avoid guilt tripping. Be patient and understanding if someone misses an email and refrain from using guilt tripping language. Like, you know, I guess you could be like, I usually say like, hey, I don't know if this email got lost in the mix. You know, I just wanted to bump this back up for you. I know you're super busy. Like, I'll say stuff like that rather than like, hey, I guess you didn't read my earlier email, you know?
Yeah, that's not cool because you don't know what all is going on. And I'll use myself as an example. As an assistant superintendent, I'm the right hand to my superintendent and things come at him left and right. He has no control over that. And if it happens and he needs me, boom, I have to be there for him. You know, mm-hmm. I have to attend that meeting or go put out that fire or go support or meet with that parent. And so my schedule, no matter how I try to structure it, it can get thrown off. Not my fault, right? So definitely need people to be understanding if I'm, don't respond as fast as they'd like. But I also remember that in the day-to-day of running a building, principals have a lot going on. The only thing that I do try to share with my leaders is, phone calls that come in before 1, 2 o'clock, try to return those before you leave at the end of the day. Same with emails. If they hit that inbox that morning,
you could do
before
that?
You leave, peek at your emails and try to respond. Well, because if not, parents will get antsy. You know, what's an emergency to them? It doesn't necessarily constitute an emergency on our part. However, we have to keep at the forefront of what we do. Do what's best for kids. Kids are our clients. Parents are their representatives.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm quick to respond to what I would call clients, and that's your client, right? Like, so if it's anybody who I work for, essentially, I'm going to be quick to respond. If somebody's asking for a favor from me, I might take my time and clear out all my clients before I turn around and get back to those other people. That's kind of my logic.
Yeah, I think it's important.
Next one is consider phone calls. So use a phone or a video calls for like something that's really complex or nuanced, has a lot of details. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, we have this really cool feature with our management system that we use to reach our parents. But for a shameless plug here, provided by School Status. And so the video calling is so much easier because when you can show your compassion and show your empathy when you're trying to, you know, calm a parent with their fears or their questions or their concerns about their child, I just think that it just makes, you know, everything feel so much better for them and put them at ease. But then at the same time, when you're thinking about trying to close a deal with a vendor, get things set up, I think I like to meet with them in person as well because I don't want them trying to run something fast over me just to get our purchase. You know, I want you to answer my questions and I need to know that this product is going to help my students achieve better. So show me, you know, show me.
That's interesting. I knew that School Status came out with a video calling a couple years ago. I didn't know if it was being adopted or not. I think the one thing that separates their video calling from, say, Zoom is it's logged and recorded, I believe.
Correct.
So there's a record of it.
Yep.
Okay. Next up, be polite in corrections. Correct mistakes politely without being rude or judgmental. I think that's pretty simple, right?
I think that's a given. We all have different perspectives. We all have different levels of training. And you got to be gentle about it. Otherwise, people will be closed off and they won't take that constructive criticism. If anything, it will build them up and teach them new skills and help them get better.
This one, I used to be so bad about this when like kind of first was a thing. It says use emojis and exclamation points wisely. You know, use them sparingly, considerately in a professional email. I remember like right when like emojis were kind of a thing, I would like smile face. Like you want to like convey your mood, but at the same time, it can get really unprofessional.
I find it completely unprofessional and I try not to use any in emails. I use them in text messages, group chats with my team members, you know, keep things light, make them laugh, make them feel good.
Not even an exclamation point?
No, because then I'm yelling.
I feel like all caps is yelling.
All caps is yelling. Exclamation points can mean a number of different things, but no, I try to stay away from emojis, period.
I hear you. Everyone knows that one guy, I think it's kind of stopped, but who would like do everything in caps. And it's usually an older person. But you know, and they weren't yelling. That's just how they typed.
Yeah.
And I always was like, quit doing all caps.
Well, that's why relationships are so important. When you get to know people, you know their quirks, you know what they mean and how they do. But when you don't know someone, you have to be concerned about how they would perceive.
Right. All right. Last one is super simple because it's something that I didn't really ever think of, but it's just not necessarily etiquette. But it says avoid attachments in initial emails because it kind of maybe will prevent it from being marked as spam. If you like start doing a lot of attachments and then maybe it's like a person that you typically don't email, leave that out just to kind of get their attention and then add the attachment later.
That's a new one for me, but I have to say we use a lot of, you know, things within the suite. And so we can share that item. So it's not necessarily an attachment, but that's good to know.
Yeah, I didn't really think about it. I know if you put a lot of email addresses, like if you have to email 50 people and you like put them all in there, that can also trigger a spam message.
Yeah, that's so why you need to blind copy all those people. I don't like when I get those emails. Or,
I think you can bulk, you know, stuff as well, but... Alrighty, Christina, are you ready for today's Brad idea?
Yes, let's go.
Our guest in today's Brad idea segment is here to give us some tips on how to balance your personal life while also remaining a superstar teacher. Helena Haynes is an educator as well as coach for new elementary teachers. She created thepresentteacher.com where she offers guidance on things like how to leave work on time and how to get your weekends back. Helena, welcome to Class Dismissed.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this is great. And, you know, to say things like how to leave work on time and how to get your weekends back, like that almost sounds too good to be true. Before you kind of give us some tips on how to get there, tell me where you were as a teacher. Because if I understand right, like your first year almost broke you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first year of teaching, a little background about me, I graduated with my master's in elementary education from Eastern Oregon University at the age of 20. Teaching is something I knew I wanted to do from the time I was 6 years old, making my little brother play teacher in school with me. And so I was very determined. I did dual credit in high school. I graduated with my associates, and I knew teaching was something I wanted to do. But when I transitioned from my master's degree to the classroom, I was extremely overwhelmed because of...
I'm going to get you to pause 1 second, because if I understand right, you're saying that like by age, you said 20, mm-hmm. you already had your master's in education, but you had not taught yet, but you were like on fire coming out of school, I guess.
Yes, I had gone through student teaching for 2 years, but I hadn't actually taught in a classroom yet.
Gotcha. But you were like, this is me. Because most people, I would say, like teachers, they start teaching after, you know, getting their bachelor's, and then they kind of go, oh, you know what, I'm going to go back and get my master's. But you were like all in.
I was. And actually, one of the reasons I did that was because I would have graduated with my bachelor's at 19. And I was worried that districts wouldn't take me seriously. So I decided, mm-hmm. you know what, I'm going to get my master's just to show that I'm serious about wanting to join this profession. So
gotcha. Okay. So sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to make sure we are all on the same page there. Please continue. So then you, I guess with your master's, you started interviewing with schools, right?
Yeah, I did. And I moved from Oregon to New Mexico to a small town called Pecos. And this district was amazing. It was small town like I had grown up with. But I remember getting to October and just looking around and thinking to myself, what have I done? Because I felt like the workload of what teachers were expected to do was drastically different than what I was expecting. And it was harder than my college degree at that point, which was not what I expected at all. And I remember during Christmas break, I remember, you know, waking up. I think I slept for like 3 days straight. And I remember just crying and thinking, what did I do? But I'm very driven. And I had to ask myself, am I going to give up on this? And I'm someone who is very determined, very driven. And I'm like, I'm going to give it my all for at least another year and a half. I'm going to do another year and see if I can figure out how to make this work. Because I was showing up at work at 6 a.m. I was leaving at 5, 6 p.m. And then I was grading papers until super late. And it just wasn't what I was expecting. I thought, you know, at least with the accreditation and the training I had, it would have been a better transition, but it really wasn't. So
I think that says a lot. I mean, here clearly, judging by your education, you're, like you said, you're driven, but you're also, you know, an overachiever. And here you go into a school district and it just shocks you. And you suddenly are like, look at this workload. This is harder than what I just did, which was getting a master's by age 20. So I think that says a lot about the challenges educators face. Like, who did you lean on at that time? Or did you have anybody to lean on?
So my district at the time didn't have a program for new teachers. And since then, I've actually talked to numerous teachers and their programs and their districts. They feel 2 out of 5 teachers that I talk to don't have or do have a district that has a program in place. And only 1 of the 5 of those teachers said that their program was helpful. My district did not have a program for new teachers. So I had another kindergarten teacher that was working, you know, on the same team as me. And she shared everything that she could. She was also a veteran teacher who had taught in the same classroom for 25 years. So she was very much doing the same thing she had done since the first year of teaching. So I had her, and my admin was trying the best that they could, but it was just, like I said, kind of like a shock to the system on how much was expected to get done.
So how did you survive? How did you come out on the other end?
A lot of grit, hard will, and then just, I knew my passion for teaching is to help kids. I want to help future generations. And I remember loving my teachers growing up, and they made it seem so easy. So just seeing my kids, building those relationships with them, and seeing those small moments where they made such big gains, and when they get that confidence in themselves that they just learned something new, and that proud moment when they think, I just did it. that's what kept me going. And it was a lot of dark times. I actually got diagnosed with anxiety and depression in February during my first year of teaching. And it was really hard to navigate the mental health space while trying to be a good teacher for my students and to be there for myself. I know a buzzword these days is self-care for teachers, but that wasn't a thing. I remember coming home feeling exhausted. I didn't want to make another decision. I would just emotionally and mentally just kind of space out. And it was just not a fun place to be at all. But I mean, I had my spouse, my boyfriend at the time, who had moved with me from Oregon. He was a great, great support. And then, like I said, my admin, they were awesome. They would come in and check on me. And I had a very present principal who would come in and observe me, give me feedback, tell me I was doing a good job. But even then, I just felt like, I'm not sure if I can do this. I'm not sure if I'm cut out for teaching.
We've been doing this podcast since 2017. I think this was 2018 that you said your first year was, correct?
Correct, yes.
And we kind of try to keep a pulse on what news stories in education are starting to bubble up. And I think we started talking about the idea of like teachers' well-being and self-care and like special rooms for teachers in schools. I think that kind of started around 2019. And then when we hit the pandemic, it was like, holy cow, someone help teachers, you know, like they need this and so forth. I think it kind of amplified it. I guess I say all that to say, like, what, as you reflect back on that challenging time, what's your takeaway? Like, do you look at it and you're kind of almost angry that no one prepped you for this, or do you have a different perspective on it?
My perspective is our admin are doing the best they can. Our teachers are doing the best they can. I'm not angry because admin and teachers already are doing the job of 10 people. It's more like we need to step up as a society to create new positions, to create different areas that can support teachers and admin. And I don't feel angry. It's more, for me, it's really sad because I know a lot of new teachers I work with, they have a hard first year and they just leave the profession altogether. And for me, it's more sad because we have amazing teachers in our districts that just can't make it past those first couple of years and they leave. But if they would have stuck it out a couple more years, or if they would have a program and support to help them in the districts, then I mean, I feel like a lot of the problems we're facing today would be a lot different. So for me, it's more sad. And what can we do together to fix it? Not necessarily anger, I would say.
At the top of this recording, I mentioned that you created this website, thepresentteacher.com. But before you could even get there and do that, because on that site, you're trying to help and coach people who were in your shoes years ago, you had to figure it out on your own. So like, what was that learning process like? And how are you even now? Like, you're still teaching, right?
I am. I'm still in the classroom.
Yeah. So how did you manage to get your life under control enough to build a website and start coaching other teachers?
So for me, this really happened during COVID. I know this is when a lot of communities and online presences happened, but I saw that there was a need to help support new teachers, especially the ones coming in during COVID. So what I did is, since I was home more, I started sharing content online on social media like Instagram about, you know, how can you take care of yourself, self-care, during this time. And what I found was this thing called batching. And in the business world, batching is, in the time management world, is doing like-minded tasks at a similar time instead of doing 10 random things, because there's this thing called time switching where it takes up to 7 minutes for you to go from complete focus between one task to another if they're completely different. That's why things like Henry Ford and the assembly line work so well. If you do something that's at this same level or using the same part of the brain at the same time, then you're not task switching and it's easier for you to complete that. So I used what I was doing online to help teachers online part-time on top of teaching. I was using those concepts in my teaching world to make my life easier. So what this looked like for me is, okay, instead of trying to lesson plan today, to prep, to communicate with families, to finish that PD I got an email about, instead today, I'm just focusing on lesson planning. So on Mondays, that's all I would do, is I would just try to lesson plan as far as I could in advance. And what happened was, the first week I did it, I could only get maybe a week in advance, but the more I did it, the faster I got. And so a couple weeks, a couple months later, I was doing 2-3 weeks at a time, and that really freed up my energy. So I started to create a schedule for myself during the week, and it looked like Monday was lesson planning, Tuesday was prepping, Wednesdays was grading, Thursdays was, you know, communication between myself, families, admin, between my team, make sure we're all on the same page. And then Friday was a makeup day where if I had to cover a class because I didn't have a prep that day, it was okay because I had an extra day. And I set up that schedule because of where my energy was. I knew at the beginning of the week, I had the energy to do those more mind, you know, the ones that need more brain power. And then towards the end of the week, I could do the things that didn't necessarily demand as much energy from me. So I started sharing that with my community online, and I found that it was working for others, and other teachers were struggling with the same struggles I struggled with when I first started teaching.
I'll be honest, you just blew my mind, because like I am that person that like pushes 20 balls forward at a time, but they don't get very far, right? Like I go around and I do this, and then someone's like, hey, have you finished this yet? And I'm like, well, no, I mean, it's coming along, but I'm doing all these other things too. So, and I understand what you mean by batching, because like it's actually a term used, like in, I do a lot of file management and stuff, and you'll like move lots of large video files, you'll do it in a batch. Like it's, I totally get what you're saying. So like that whole concept that you started sharing with other educators, is that, was that specific to educators, or was it just specific to productivity and time management?
So specifically, it was for teachers. When I first started the Present Teacher, my whole mission with the Present Teacher was, how can I save teachers the time and energy in the classroom so they can show up for those big moments for my students, for their students? How can they show up and build those strong relationships? How can they be there in the moment and catch when that student, you know, is having a struggle with a skill, and they can see where the gap is? And so for me, it was more sharing time management with teachers online and sharing self-care tips online. And then it kind of just morphed into this whole using this time management to then give teachers that freedom outside of the classroom so they can start taking care of themselves however they see fit. And then they can show up and have a thriving career for, you know, the rest of their career.
I love that. I also liked your tip on kind of like, you know, putting the less tedious task or maybe the more fun task on the last day of the week. I kind of do the same thing with like morning and late afternoon. Like if there's something I hate doing, but I have to get done, I usually do it in the morning when I'm fresh. And then I do the things that I like to do later because it's easier and I'm tired and I need that second cup of tea or whatever. So what else you got? Like, I mean, those are fantastic tips. I mean, is that kind of how part of the strategy to get your weekends back and leave on time is just batching?
It is that. I feel like there's more though. Specifically for me, when I started helping new teachers, I noticed that a lot of teachers were struggling with classroom management. So I actually created a framework that kind of walks through all these phases, and it's called the Thriving Teacher Framework. Mm-hmm. And how this came about was and how my whole batching schedule came about is I took some time to reflect, and I asked myself, if there's something I had to do in the classroom that if I didn't do for an entire month, my classroom would fall apart, what would it be? And so I just sat down and listed all my priorities, and that came down to classroom management, communication, organizing, data and grading, planning. And those were the main things I needed to get done on a weekly basis inside of the classroom. So then what I like to help my new teachers walk through is the Thriving Teacher Framework. And the first stage is classroom management. How can we get your classroom running so smoothly that you can step out and have a communication or have a conversation with your admin, with a supporting teacher in the hallway if you need to, and your students are going to be on task? So that's the first stage that I help them walk through.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's a good test, right? Like, can I step out for a second and everything doesn't go to, you know what, in a handbasket. So I also noticed on your website, you kind of list some other things like what to do instead of taking away recess or how to navigate a chatty class. I mean, are these things that often you find these new teachers are struggling with?
Yes, absolutely. And I wasn't classroom management wasn't my strong point in the beginning. And I feel like that's why throughout the years, I've gotten better at it to the point where I feel comfortable sharing it, because I know what teachers struggle with because I was right there with them. But, you know, learning how to manage a chatty classroom, and oftentimes we'll see these trends online like blurt beans and stickers and stuff like that. And while yes, those can help a classroom run, there's more to that. And for me, what I've been showing my new teachers that I work with is the importance of having clear routines and expectations. And that was something I definitely overlooked when I first started teaching. I was going on to, you know, social media, and I was looking at all the trending strategies people were using, but nobody was really talking about what is the basics to classroom management and what does that look like. And oftentimes when I reflect now, a lot of the behavior problems I had in the classroom was simply because I wasn't being clear enough on what my expectations were. I'd ask my students to go get online, and then I'd get upset that they were, you know, goofing off when they did it, but I didn't have a conversation with them at the beginning. What does this look like and sound like? What does this not look like and sound like? And then the most important step that I know a lot of teachers miss is, why is it important? Because growing up, I was that kid that always asked, why do we do things the way we do? Mm-hmm. Not because I was trying to be defiant, but because when students know why, they're more likely to apply it later, and the buy-in is there because they know why it should be important to them.
Going back to the fact that, you know, you came into this with a master's, but like, did you not learn, you know, is no one teaching the classroom management 101 in college? Is it just something that kind of gets overlooked for educators?
Yeah, I never took a classroom management class. And teachers that I talk to now, I don't know about, you know, maybe there are some out there, but none of the teachers I'm talking to have ever had classroom management experience. They expect, you know, student teachers to have that during their placements, which mm-hmm. is great. But if you're missing that first couple weeks of school where teachers are really going through with their students the procedures and expectations, student teachers aren't getting that. And then I know here in New Mexico, where I'm currently at, a lot of teachers have those provisional licenses, licensing, so they may not have had student teaching. So they don't really have classroom management experience except when they start teaching.
This is all really great stuff, and I think it's fantastic what you're doing. Can you share with me a story of where you've been able, like where you've gotten feedback from somebody you worked with and kind of turn things around for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a first year teacher I was working with. She was in the middle school. And well, first off, to get her interview, she was told that she was having a hard time getting an interview because she was so new. And I walked her through that on how to show up in the interview process confident and how to lead with your it factor and how to do research on the district's mission statement. But from there, what she quickly realized is, I don't know anything about classroom management. This particular teacher, she went through a college in California, and she didn't have any classroom management experience. So what I did is I created a program and I walked her through the foundations of what it looks like and sounds like, what she should be teaching during the first couple weeks of school. And she sent me a message saying, thank you so much. I just taught my students how to have a conversation following your procedures and expectations formula, and they did amazing. And so we continued working together, and now she had the same problems I did, where she was overwhelmed and just couldn't quite grasp how to tackle her to-do list. And then by December, she sent me a message saying, I think I'm going to start sharing my story online, because I went from having a really hard time, you know, getting all my tasks done, to now I have no work I'm bringing home on the weekends. Now I'm, you know, enjoying time with friends and family on the weekends, and I want to start contributing to the online space. So she's actually looking at, you know, creating her own podcast, and that's only 6 months as a first year teacher. And I'm extremely proud of her. And it's just amazing what teachers can do when they have the support in place that they need to manage the workload and to be there for their students and positively manage their classroom.
Excellent. I'm probably going to steal your batching technique. I know I've got a lot to learn, but I just love that idea. Again, the website is thepresentteacher.com. Where do you like people to find you on social media? Are you a TikTok or Instagram gal or both?
I'm both. I mostly hang out on Instagram, but I seem to get a following more on TikTok. So either one.
Right? I think everyone feels that way.
Right?
So, are you ready for our pop quiz?
I am.
All right, first question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
I think reading, because I feel like once students can read, they can start writing and they can start getting their ideas out there and sharing it more effectively and reach a higher audience with others.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Finances, specifically budgeting, taxes, everything else in between.
What does every child deserve?
Love and support network around them.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
Managing the workload and supporting one another while we're trying to manage our own life.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
For my teacher friends out there, probably coffee.
Which teacher changed your life?
That would be Miss Murdoch, who, oddly enough, I got to be, she was my mentor teacher when I went through my master's program, so I'm really grateful for her.
What'd she do?
I was actually supposed to skip first grade because I was really bored and I would come home complaining to my family that all I did was color and my family didn't want me to skip first grade. So what she did was she would pull me back, she would give me projects, and she really met me at the level I was at and didn't treat me differently. And she saw past my disruptive behavior and saw that there was a reason why. And she helped me start on the path of really liking education, which I'm really grateful for.
Which book have you read, love, and want to recommend to our listeners?
I think it would be The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm kind of a time management guru, but I really like that one because it talks about managing your tasks and the big priorities versus the small priorities in your life.
Again, you've been listening to Helena Haynes. The website is thepresentteacher.com. Forgive me, I did not actually ask what your Instagram or TikTok handle is. Do you want to share that?
Yep, it's at thepresentteacher.com on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, podcast, everything else.
Thanks again for joining us on the Class Dismissed podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. If you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com or tweet us at Class Dismissed. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So please subscribe to the show, and we'd also appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. On behalf of all the good people working at School Status and Christina, representing all those educators out there, thank you for listening. I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class dismissed!